If you change your mind, we're the first in line. Honey, we're still free, just as long as you don't ask us to decide what's for dinner. In this ABBA-backed episode, Kristen is taking a chance on herself and diving into the psychology behind decision fatigue. She's discussing what it is, why it happens, how it impacts ADHDers who already struggle with executive dysfunction, and some ways to avoid it that don't involve just eating pasta for every single meal. Although that's always a valid option, we don't judge. Plus, we're tossing around the proverbial pigskin as we ponder about kidney transplants. Play Susan's favorite game, Is It Cannibalism? Question the existence of radish people and more.
They said that we'd grow out of it. Well, the joke's on them, that's just our brains. We're eccentric, loud, and stubborn. And most of our clothing is covered in stains. It's not a deficit of attention. There's just too much to think about. So if executive dysfunction becomes a little too much, if you forgot why you came in this room, or you're hypersensitive to touch, then put on your seamless socks and come join our little flock. Bitches stimming together, we're weirds of a feather. Weirds of a feather.
Ah! Caca!
Okay. There we go. We're recording and we can just kind of warm up.
I've been digging ABBA recently. It's been on repeat in my household for the past week.
That's so fun. It's good spring music.
I put it on in the OR the other day. We had a late case and the surgeon's like, what do you want to listen to? And I was like, oh. First of all, there are requirements for OR music. Did you know this?
No. Is this just like a
These are my
official?
Requirements.
Oh, your requirements?
These are my requirements. It's got to have pep.
Yeah.
You know? Especially late night.
Yeah,
I don't want
you don't
like
want sad,
somber, sad, you know, Lord of the Rings soundtrack over here. It's got to have pep. So.
You need pep.
And it's got to be like a crowd favorite. Like, I think country music is very divisive.
Yeah.
Some people really hate it.
Yep.
Such as
Me.
Yourself.
I hate it.
And some people really love it. And I think if, same with like rap music or punk or any of that, I think some people really don't like it. So you got to have a crowd favorite. So ABBA, always a great choice.
Billy Joel.
I didn't think about that. Fleetwood Mac.
Yep. Queen.
Queen. The Bee Gees.
Ooh.
Right? Earth, Wind, Fire.
Yep.
10 out of 10 right there.
ABBA's a good one.
Yeah. We were bumping. Surgery went like negative amount of time because
just flew by.
It was just flying by. It was great.
Terrible outcome. Having, no one could focus.
I know. No, we had a great outcome. Everything was fine. Patient did well despite having an emergency, and OR is happy. A happy OR is a good OR.
I'd like to know when I come out of surgery what the surgeons were listening to during my surgery. Like,
well, sometimes
this surgery brought to you by ABBA.
The other day we had a guy. He was had like light sedation, so he's still awake during the surgery. And he requested reggae. And we had a lovely time. Oh, he loved it. He was like singing along.
That's so cute.
It was really cute. He's a very nice man. And I just saw him in the office and I said, you had a great music selection. It's always good when you've got everybody going. Anyway.
That's a good idea to like request certain music that you know will keep people in a good mood and keep them pepped up.
Yeah.
For your surge.
All right. Yeah. It's nice. And then sometimes if we're extra serious, there's a surgeon who shuts off the radio and we don't listen to anything.
Oh.
Well, I think he gets distracted by it. And if it's like a very serious thing, then we don't listen.
I'm like Yo-Yo Ma. Yo-Yo Ma.
I would fall asleep. There's no way.
You don't like that?
I like it. I'm just saying that, you know, when you're called in at 11 o'clock at night and you have to be there till 2.
Yeah, I guess I could put you back to sleep.
I need some pep.
Yeah.
Pep.
in my step paw.
Anyway.
All right.
I have a warm-up question.
Oh, you want to introduce the podcast first?
Yeah, sure.
Think about it.
I'm thinking.
Yeah. All right. Give us some thought. Noodle.
Welcome to Where's the Feather, an ADHD adjacent podcast. I'm your host, Kristen Stanhope.
And I'm your host, Grace Bray.
Welcome.
Welcome.
We've got a meaty episode.
Oh, yeah.
And speaking of me, I have a warm-up question.
All right.
Even though I had a warm-up comment, but now I have a warm-up question.
Okay.
So there's a recent article that I'm going to link in the show notes that I think in Boston, but I could be wrong, they made these like GMO pigs and then harvested their kidneys to use on people, which is
interesting.
Incredible for, because the kidney transplant list is huge. Mm. You know, there's, you know, thousands and thousands of people on it waiting for a kidney. And this could really change medicine if we could like grow kidneys from pigs.
Yeah.
My question is, I actually have a couple. So you have received this pig kidney, right?
That'd be crazy.
Do you eat meat? Kidney. Do you eat pork after that? Would you feel weird? Would you feel weird? I'd probably feel a little weird.
Yeah, I would probably feel a little weird.
I don't know if it would stop me entirely, but I think I would feel weird. Would that be technically cannibalism?
That's a very good question. Yeah. That's a really interesting aspect of our cannibalism conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, no.
It all goes back to cannibalism.
It always comes back to cannibalism. Under the technical definition of cannibalism, I would say, no, it's not cannibalism. But you're right. It's like, does it change things? And also, our traditional understanding of cannibalism doesn't incorporate this new discovery in medicine. Like, they're not
right.
They're not thinking about what if you get a pig kidney transplant and now it's a part of your body. And if someone were to eat your pig kidney, would that be cannibalism?
Because it belonged to a human.
Yeah. Like, I think that's the question.
Also, I have a lot of other questions about this article. Like, what do they do with the pig after? Do they take both kidneys and, like, away with the pig?
Do away with
it. Or do they leave the pig with one kidney? Because you can have one kidney.
Do all animals have two kidneys?
I don't.
Not all. That's
no,
obviously
but I'm pretty
not.
Sure mammals pigs have two kidneys. Yeah.
They better be letting that pig live.
No, I think they usually, I think they kill it. I think, like,
that's
could
sad.
You eat the pig after? Or is it weird? Because then you're, like, eating something that.
If anything, I feel like if they're going to kill the pig for your kidney, it would be respectful to do some kind of post-kidney transplant pig ceremony.
Right.
Where you're, you know, thanking the pig for its gift to you that they didn't have a choice in giving to you. So I don't know if it's a gift.
I know.
It's
there's a lot of ethical,
terrible.
Weird questions about this. And like, I get it. Like, you're saving a human life. You're saving them for a life of dialysis. You know, we use pigs for lots of things, like raising meat and leather. Do we do pig leather? Yeah, we do.
Pigs, cows. Do pigs make? I don't think pigs make leather.
I think
leather.
You get anything with skin you can make leather out of, right? Goat leather, pig leather.
I don't know if that, I mean, I think technically you could, but I don't think they do. I don't think it's a high
skin.
Quality leather.
I'm not talking about quality. I'm just talking about quantity.
That's another question that opens up a whole different box.
There's so many ethical questions I have about, you know, encompassing this pig bonanza. I don't know, pig kidney harvesting.
Bonanza.
Yeah,
I guess it's hard to be ethically against this if you do consume meat, because it's like, well, we raise pigs for us to eat.
So why
is it any different for us to raise pigs to harvest their kidneys?
Right.
I just want to make sure those pigs are being eaten after. If you're going to kill a pig just for its
kidney, then it's like,
feels like a waste.
Here's my other thing is, and I guess I bet you someone knows this. When they bring the pig, do they kill the pig first and then take the kidney out? Or do they put
better.
The kidney? Well, do they, because the kidney has to stay alive, right? So I wonder if they bring that pig into the OR and then put it to sleep and then open it up, harvest the kidney, put it in the patient?
Make it recover from kidney surgery until you need the second one, then kill it and take its kidney? That's horrible. That's dark.
I feel like
they should wait till two people need a kidney transplant at the same time, do both of them. Kill the pig, do both the kidneys
also,
at once.
Is this like eat one kidney fits all, or is like, because I know they're genetically modified kidneys to fit humans. And I think, you know, the humans are put on all these immunosuppressants as any kidney transplant person would. But do I have a, like, if I'm on the transplant list and they're like, congrats, you're getting a pig kidney, is it a specific pig or can I choose any pig? Do I get to choose a pig?
Does it have to be a match? Would you want to choose the pig? Would you want to say in which pig it is?
No, I want a surprise pig.
Yeah.
I want it to be fate.
Yeah, it was meant to be. Someone else picked it out.
But yeah, so I think as far as poll questions, what I'll probably do is ask, my initial question would be, if you got a pig kidney, would you eat pig meat after?
Mm. And my question is, if someone killed you and ate your pig kidney, would that be considered human cannibalism?
We have a lot of questions.
Because it's a pig kidney, but it's part of the human body now.
So they killed you, but they just ate the kidney?
Yes.
They didn't eat any other body part?
No, just the kidney. Right?
I mean, you still have to deal with the fact that that person murdered a human, right?
Yeah.
So that's like...
There's that. Either way, you're a murderer.
You're a murderer regardless.
But are you a cannibal on top of murderer is the question.
That is a dilemma. I don't know.
Right?
I don't know the... I don't know.
It's really, are we going to have to do another cannibalism candlelight? Upset Susan even more?
Sorry, Susan.
Yeah, sorry, Susan.
But.
All right. I think those are fun speculations. That's a good topic.
Yeah. And once again, I will link the article. It just came up. It just happened. But this is really a huge change for medicine. And this, if this can continue to happen, that would be great for all those people who are needing kidneys and
Terrible
for the pigs, but it would be a game changer for human medicine, because who knows what other organs, you know, they could do livers, they could, you know, maybe one day we'll just, you know, pick a variety of organs, you know, I'll get a new pancreas for diabetes or something, you know,
it
could really change the way we think about different diseases.
I think they should take one kidney from the pig, sew him up, let him recover from his kidney surgery, and then send him to a lovely farm where he gets to live out the rest of his days.
Yeah.
I think that would be the only fair way to do this.
I guarantee you that's not the way they're doing this, but wouldn't that be nice?
A girl can dream.
Yeah. But yeah, that's my warm-up question. If you have any thoughts, or if you're in medicine and you're like, I used to work at a lab that did this, let me know.
I'm a
questions.
Pig who donated a kidney.
Yeah, if you're a pig who donated a kidney,
Kidney?
Oh, my goodness.
You got there.
Yeah, let us know at weirdsafeather@gmail.com.
Yeah, reach out.
Yeah, type it. Type up an email.
Yeah.
Type that up.
Type it up with your little hooves.
Hooves.
All right. Let's get in those little accomplishments.
Yeah, let's do accomplishments, and then I've got meat for you.
Pig meat. Sorry for any pigs listening. All right, let's do it.
Little accomplishments, but big in our hearts. Yeah. Grace.
Yeah.
What did you accomplish this week?
I started Lexapro.
Woo!
Woo!
Yeah.
My PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder, has really been like fucking me up for...
It's a bitch.
You know, I was going to say half the month, but it's really like 3 weeks out of four. So most of the time I feel bad and super anxious, and it just makes you feel like very apathetic and like, what's the point of anything?
It's really
and
sad.
And after years of dealing with this, I'm like, I should probably try a medication for this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm
modern medicine.
I'm pro medication within reason. And yep. So it's like, don't be a hypocrite.
And you've also tried non-medicative ways.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I might as well give the medication game a shot.
Exactly. So they started me on a little baby dose. I'm on 5 milligrams.
Woo! Which, yeah.
You know,
love that.
Tiny little bit. They'll boost me up. I've just been like, it's, you know, how it is. It's always such a friggin' process to get on a new medication.
Yeah.
It's like, you got to make the doctor's appointment.
Yep.
You got to remember what day it is. You got to show up on that correct day.
You got to go to the pharmacy. You got to pick it up.
And then, like, what if it doesn't work out? What if
you're going to make a follow-up appointment to check in to see how did it work?
And what if it's like giving you all these bad symptoms? And then it's like, okay, maybe you don't want to die this week, but your belly hurts, you know?
Yeah.
It's like all these different things.
Yeah.
So I think it's the thing of like, you know, the unknown makes it so paralyzing to be able to get started. Cause it's like, I don't know how this will work out. So I just won't do anything. So I finally did it, finally started. And I'm feeling pretty good so far.
Nice.
I think I'll probably go up on it. Cause you know, I haven't noticed a huge difference.
Yeah. I think the highest dose I was on was 15 in college.
Yeah, I think.
But I was repeatedly non-compliant, so don't be like me.
I won't. I'm very good at taking my medication.
You are very good at taking now medications.
I'm taking it at night, so I've had to adjust, and now I have to, I'm a person who takes nighttime medication, I guess, so I have to remember.
You need one of those little pill packs, the AM, PM, yeah. 7 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Tuesday.
Not Tuesday. skip Tuesday.
It's like there's one missing.
I know something's wrong. No, I just keep it by my toothbrush, but I keep getting in bed and then remembering and being like, fuck. Then I have to get out of bed and take it, but I do it and I'm compliant. I'm very compliant.
That's good. So compliance is good in this case.
Yeah. I'm not compliant in a lot of areas, but medication, I am very compliant.
Because yeah, you are a non-compliant person.
Right?
Usually when it comes to rules, you don't follow them.
And you do.
Yes. But when it comes to medication, I am the worst.
Because it's something that has to do with yourself and you're the only one affected by you following the rules.
Yeah.
So I think it's more about how you think of yourself versus how I think of myself. You know, I care about keeping myself within compliance. I don't care about external compliance, though.
I care about external compliance
and not internal.
Yeah. I really wish I didn't.
We're the opposite, yeah.
Yeah, we are opposites.
Fuck
but that's
them
why
rules.
We're friends.
Friends. We complement each other perfectly. Mm. All right, Chris, what did you accomplish?
I cooked not once, two times this week.
Whoa!
Two times.
Wow, what'd you make?
So I'm restarting the FODMAP diet, low FODMAPs for IBS. It's a whole big thing.
Sucks.
You know of it. I know of
it.
If you don't know of it, that's probably great. So I kind of looked up these recipes. So one said it was a chili, but didn't have any beans or onions or anything good in it, but it was very good.
What is it?
I think it looked more like a curry, but they called it a chili.
Well, what are the ingredients? You made it.
Sweet potato.
Oh.
And all kinds of spices and tomato paste. It was really good.
Mm.
I'm going to actually make it again next week because and pumpkin was in it too.
Oh.
It was so good.
That's not good. It's stupid that you can't eat beans on a low FODMAP diet. I understand it.
Yeah.
But like beans are so good for you.
I would love to eat beans.
They fuck you up. Full of farts.
Yeah. There's like certain trigger foods. So the worst, you want to know what the worst food is? Popcorn. It's my nemesis. I cannot do it. It will ruin me from the inside out, literally.
What about corn?
Corn, not as great, but popcorn seems to be the worst thing for me.
Whoa, I wonder why that is.
I don't know. I can't explain it, but and my aunt every year gets me one of those tins with the three different popcorns.
Oh, I love those.
And Christopher will hide it from me because I have no self-control.
Yeah.
And I'll be like on the floor with like a heating pad, just like being like super bloaty and whatever. And
it's worth it.
And him like, I just love popcorn.
It's so
and
good.
And so he'll hide it from me and eat the whole thing without me knowing, which is, you know, true love right there.
Yes. I'm sure it's just for you. Yeah.
Yeah. But so I cooked this chili / curry, not quite sure, but it was really good.
Mm.
And then I cooked that stir fry that I literally just ate before, which the stir fry didn't turn out great, but then Christopher fixed it. So that's good.
You Betty Crocker over
I know.
Here.
Look at me. It was really, I was proud of myself.
I'm proud of you too.
But then I was burnt out. And then for the next two nights, I had like girl dinner, which was like three chips and a bag of peach rings.
That's all you need. Nutrients.
So,
two times a week is pretty solid.
That's it. Yeah. I think I'm going to double the curry chili recipe. Mm. Because it was so good, but it just wasn't enough for the two of us to have multiple nights in a row. So.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Make enough for the
like
next night.
Like a batch,
night.
Yeah.
Yep, that's the only way I cook.
Are you ready for this meat?
Yeah.
Ready for my meat?
Fry up that meat, lay it on me.
We got meat.
It is the meat.
It is the meat.
The meat.
All right,
meat,
so
meat, meat.
We've got, meat. We have a meaty episode today. This is an episode near and dear to my heart and inspired by all of my colleagues at work who make several difficult decisions every single day, which gets tiring after a while.
Hmm.
What are we talking about, Grace? It's decision fatigue. Bow, bow, bow.
I know it intimately.
You know it. You love it.
I hate it.
Yeah, it's not great.
No.
So you might be saying to yourself, what is decision fatigue?
What is decision fatigue?
Really self-explanatory. It's a theory. It's kind of been proven. I don't know. What is a theory when it becomes proven? Proof?
I don't know. A fact?
It's a thing.
Yeah. a concept?
I guess, yeah, it's a concept. That's
like
okay.
like a psychological concept.
Yes, that's what it is. That humans have a finite capacity for accurate and effective decision making. If you go and like Google decision fatigue, you'll hear this like, we make on average 35,000 decisions a day. And I don't know where that number came from, but that's a lot of decisions. Because you think about it, you wake up and then you have to decide, are you going to do snooze? Are you not going to do snooze? Are you going to get up? What are you going to wear? What are you going to eat? You know, you're going to brush your teeth. Are you going to leave on time? Are you going to do your hair? Are you going to, you know, and that's just to get out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of decisions you make every single day. And so decision fatigue doesn't mean that when you reach like 35,001 decisions, you're no longer able to make any decisions at all. It kind of just means that instead your ability to kind of process this information that you need to process in order to make an effective decision is reduced. And often you rely on past patterns and possible biases, which we'll talk about, to make that decision. So
that makes sense.
So before we get into it, I just want to go over a couple of definitions, your favorite.
I love them.
Some new vocab for everybody.
Ooh.
And now we're kind of going back to like Freudian era, but not really.
Oh, great.
So remember like the ego, superego, and id?
Yes.
So like classic Freudian concepts. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about ego depletion, which is the idea that self-control or willpower draws from a limited pool of mental resources. So basically, your willpower, your self-control, your decision-making is limited.
I remember learning that in undergrad psychology.
Yeah. Well, we're back at it. And then there's another word called heuristics, which is these mental shortcuts you use to make quick and effective decisions, especially when you have limited time, information, or resources, like if you're ego depleted. And then the status quo bias is the last thing I want to talk about, which is a preference for keeping things the way that they are. You know, it's like, don't change what's not broken or something like that. So just kind of maintaining the status quo or the people's, I guess, yeah, preference to maintain that status quo rather than changing it up. Kind of like Joe Biden is the classic status quo bias.
Yeah.
Why change it up when you've got Joe Biden? He's not perfect, but he's status quo, right? Kind of.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people would argue that he is broken.
And
that
he is. No. I'm not arguing that. He's by far from ideal candidate.
He's funding a genocide against Palestine.
He really is. Maybe that's a bad example, but what I mean by that is looking at it from like the Democratic Party rather than putting out a new candidate. Just
so like he's fine. Yeah,
he's fine. He's 80,000 years old. He's going to be great for the next 4 years.
He'll
Retire.
Yeah. So I would think of it as like something that's like it could be improved, but it's just like the way things are. So people don't seek to change it. Cause it's like, it's
right. The
it's
incumbent.
Good enough.
Yeah. They just want to fund the incumbent. Cause he's already, you know, he's already made it this far.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, looking into a possible better option.
Hmm.
Anyway, that's probably a bad example, but that's status quo bias.
Okay. All right. You got there.
There's been a lot of studies about this, and going all the way back to 1998, there's this guy called Baumeister. Who did a bunch of studies about this. And his first one was he gave unsolvable puzzles to people. And then he offered them some sort of sweet treat. I read cookies in one place and then chocolates in another. I'm just calling them sweet treats.
Sweet treats?
Sweet treats to, he offered them either a sweet treat or a radish. You can have either, but you can only have one.
Do you get it when you finish the puzzle or do you get it during the puzzle?
Before you start the puzzle.
Okay.
And so then some people chose a sweet treat and some people chose a radish, which is like, who eats?
They chose the radish or they were assigned the radish?
They chose the radish. Because
that says something
huge
about those people.
Well, yes. So here we go. One, that they're crazy. Because who eats radishes on the regular just straight up like
no,
that?
No, lock them away.
Yeah. Something is wrong.
Yeah.
But
get checked.
What they found is that the people who chose the radish gave up on these unsolvable puzzles more quickly than the people who chose the sweet treat.
Yeah,
the
radish people.
Yeah, fuck you, radish people. And what
you're weak.
The thought was that the sweet treat people kind of gave into their id, which is their like desire for pleasurable things, right? Mm. They gave into their wants and their needs, and became less ego depleted than the radish people who had to make that conscious they didn't just like, I'm gonna get a cookie.
Mm.
They had to like make that conscious, like, I want a cookie, but I'm gonna choose a radish because it's healthy. Fuck that.
So like they use up their self-control.
Yes, exactly. Their self-control and became more, quote, ego depleted than the sweet treat people. And even though it was a small decision, they found like statistically significant difference between the two groups.
Or is it that the sugar from the cookie gave them the mental fortitude to go forth of the puzzle?
And maybe the radish people were so miserable eating a radish. They're like, fuck this, man.
I'm out of here.
I hate radishes.
Fuck
Why do
they
do this?
Right? Why do I always do this?
Come hate on, John. I just wanted a sweet treat.
Should have said yes. Or also, is it like whenever I think about psychology studies back then, but even now, we're still not fully looking at like ADHD brains, autistic brains. Like we just consider like all these participants as if they all have the same brains.
Mm-hmm.
And could it be that like, you know, the ADHDers or ADHDers are more likely to go for the sweet treat because of that impulsivity or whatever, and they're like better at puzzles, you know?
It could be. I think
that's why I always struggle with these.
Right. And, you know, and it was back in 1998, studies. You know, it was a while ago.
Yeah.
And I'm still like hung up on the radish. No one eats radishes straight up. What about celery? That would have been a better option.
Ugh, celery, yuck.
You have celery or you have a sweet treat.
How many people chose the radish? Two? Like,
I don't know.
How could it have been a 50-50 split?
It,
where are they finding? They go to a farmer's market and recruit people?
I just.
Where are they finding these radish people?
Who is eating a straight up radish?
I just think there are so many factors that go into just that alone of like the types of people
a
who would choose
is like
a radish.
A garnish almost, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Who's just like,
who's eating
a radish?
Straight up radishes.
I do think
besides
of it as, like,
my
rabbits.
Mom. Oh, yeah. Your mom. Yeah. But she's like,
even then you like put it on a salad.
You, yeah.
Like,
you mix it with something.
Slices,
yeah,
on a salad.
I would eat a radish on a salad. It's going to be mixed, but
what are you,
straight
Dwight
up.
True? You're just like chomping into a radish?
It's like an onion. People don't eat straight up onions, but you put onions in things and it makes it good.
Yeah, I think we need to look much more deeply at
the radish. I should have read
people.
The whole trial, but I didn't because I was hung up on this radish thing.
That's all right. I am too. I see what you're going for. Like, I do see, you know, and I remember learning that in psychology where you're supposed to reduce the amount of like self-control that you have to use throughout the day, because then by the time it becomes the evening, then you have no self-control left,
right.
And you've depleted it, and then you're going to like go crazy on your snacks.
Right.
It makes sense.
So there's another study in 2019 that studied business analysts, and the more, I don't know how business works, but the more forecasting they did.
Ah, yes.
Ah, yes. Predictions.
Mm.
The more they would rely on previous trends to come to that forecast. So they would rely on those heuristics to make that decision.
Mm.
So if you were someone who made 19 forecasts a day. I don't know if that's correct.
Wow, it's a lot of forecasts. Or not very many.
Or
could be either
it
one.
It could be either.
Yeah.
Compared. So if you're someone who makes 19 forecasts compared to someone who makes like three, the person who's making 19 forecasts a day is more likely to rely on previous trends, possible biases, and heuristics when doing those forecasting things. Than the person making three a day.
And that kind of reminds me, too, of the whole, you know, autism pattern recognition thing where, you know, when we talk about, like, during my top-down versus bottom-up episode where we are talking about how pattern recognition in autistic people can be a huge strength, but it can also be a hindrance because you assume that, oh, well, this is the pattern or I've taken in all this information. You assume that you are making decisions based on all the information when really you're kind of like leaving out the stuff you haven't taken in because you haven't taken it in, so you don't know. So
right.
That can like mess. Like,
what literally have something on top down versus bottom thinking.
Ayo, look at us on the same page.
Literally on the same page. But Yeah.
So no, it's like good to have more evidence sometimes, but then you can also make the mistake of believing that you have all of the evidence.
Right. And I think it's good when you're like, you know, a business analyst to rely on previous trends and stuff because we learn from history. But at the same time, you can't just go based on those trends.
Hmm.
So there's another study on orthopedic surgeons in Sweden or Switzerland. Sweden. They followed this clinic of orthopedic surgeons. They found that they were less likely to schedule patients for surgery towards the end of their shift or their day or their clinic than in the beginning of the shift. And they thought the theory is after many decisions were made throughout the day about patient care, the surgeons became ego depleted and developed decision fatigue and were more likely to follow like the status quo, which is no surgery.
That like they're probably fine.
Yeah.
So you mean scheduling patients for surgery.
Yes.
Not talking about they're scheduling the patients to have their surgery in either the morning or the afternoon. They're making the decision to schedule them for a future surgery.
Yes.
Let's say
all you do is knee arthritis surgery. So you're just doing total knees.
Mm.
And the first, your morning, you schedule... You have 5 patients in the morning and 5 patients in the afternoon to like evaluate, treat. More likely the patients that come in the morning, you're going to say, you need surgery.
Mm.
Let's take you to the OR. Not that day, but later on.
I gotcha.
And then the patients in the afternoon, you're more likely to say, well, let's not do surgery yet. Let's try physical therapy or something else like that.
Okay. Huh. That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, it is interesting. And then there's another study. There's actually quite a few, and I just picked some, but there's one on judges and decision-making with that, which was really interesting. But
ones you all picked are medically based.
Yeah,
weird.
Well, because we're, yeah, except for that one business one.
Well, yeah.
So there was another study that watched nurses in like a telehealth situation, and they followed... how often the nurse would refer them to what they call like a secondary health professional. So basically like you call into telehealth, how often do they say you need to follow up with your primary care, you need to go to urgent care, or you need to go to the ER, which would be the status quo decision, the clinically safest but most conservative and resource inefficient decision is exactly what they said.
Mm.
So the status quo, the heuristic decision would be you need to go see someone in person about this rather than saying like, oh, this sounds like this. I would recommend ABC.
Mm.
So they saw that there was a statistically significant trend of like every call farther away from their most recent break, the nurse was more likely to refer out to a secondary health professional.
Hmm.
So if you were the first person to call or the third person to call after the nurse's break, they were more likely to not refer out. And then if you were like 10th or 15th or however farther away, if you were farther away from their break, you were more likely to be told, go to the ED, go to urgent care, go to your primary care.
Mm, or they're just like, take this problem elsewhere. I can't make a more thorough decision
sometimes
about
you
it.
Need, yeah, exactly. Sometimes that's the right decision.
Mm.
And you know, it's hard because sometimes you just have a lot of people who call telehealth who all need to be like actually seen.
Mm.
Being like, I'm having blinding headaches and my blood pressure is 200 over 110. You're like, okay. Please go to like some, you need help, you know? And maybe you get like 3 of those calls in a row. But what they're saying is that the trend is that that's, you're more likely to be referred to go somewhere else in person farther away from their break.
Hmm. It's very interesting. I feel like that has implications for if you're going in to see a doctor and you're like wanting a certain outcome, when should you do it?
Make a morning appointment.
Yes.
I actually have that written down. Nice. I always make all of my doctor's appointments earliest in the morning.
Mm.
I feel like, one, because I'll just dread it and I'll just think about it all day.
Same.
And 2, because I usually go to work after. And 3, because of this now.
Mm.
So who gets decision fatigue? Everybody. Everybody gets this. There's no like, it happens only in these types of people. Neurotypicals, neurodivergent, STEM people, non-STEM people. So obviously, the more decisions you make, the more likely you are to become fatigued. But also, the more complex and difficult decisions you make, the more likely you are to become fatigued.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Right? So classic examples are surgeons, CEOs, and politicians. Mm. Those are like the top three because they're making very complex decisions and they're making many decisions throughout the day.
Right. Like, imagine being like the fucking president.
Yeah. I couldn't. No.
Think of how many
only a crazy person wants that job.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. I truly, whenever someone says they want to be president, it's like, you're why? Like,
psychopath.
What's wrong with you?
It's wrong. Yeah, exactly. No one wants that. Who's like sane.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
Right. And like, obviously, everyone can get decision fatigue because it's just like a process of the brain. But I also do, and maybe you have this down below, but I think it's also important to keep in mind that decision-making is one of those seven executive functions. When we talk about executive functioning,
exactly.
ADHDers and autistic people have
reduced executive functioning. But I definitely was flirting with the idea. I just had a hard time getting my thoughts on paper.
Yeah, you got a lot here.
But
I'm always here to bring up executive functions.
Thank you. Yeah, and it is a huge thing of executive function, which is why we may struggle with this more, but everybody can get this. And then what can this look like? Well, kind of like brain fog, mental fatigue, physical fatigue. A lot of people have decision avoidance, procrastination.
If it's a
tough decision, they're just like, I'll decide tomorrow.
Yep. And then it's been 8 years and you've never made a decision.
Never made any decisions about anything.
Yep. I do that so often.
Yes. And then a lot of times it becomes impulse decision making, and also like the more you avoid, the more likely you are to impulse decide. You know, I have a good example of my mattress that you like to bring up. I was trying to buy a new mattress and I had a whole spreadsheet and I did all this like research on like the firmness, money, whether it was shipped or not, the warranty. I had a whole Excel spreadsheet about it. And then one had a sale. My mom was like, this company has a sale on mattresses today. And I bought it that day. It was like not even in my top three. It was impulsive because I didn't want to make a decision, but I needed to because I needed a mattress.
And then the decision's kind of being made for you in the sense of like, well, you could save money on this. So it seems like an easy choice.
It was extremely impulsive. I'm not 100% satisfied with my mattress, but it's okay.
And it, you know, that makes sense why ADHDers especially have so many problems with like substance use, impulse shopping, you know,
impulse eating, binge eating,
because, you know, it's like with everything ADHD and autism related, it's like, yes, everyone does have decision fatigue, but our amount of, you know, self-control we have is just depleted much faster. So maybe, you know, maybe a neurotypical person would be, you know, their decision-making abilities would be depleted by the end of the day. They've had to make so many decisions that day. Maybe an ADHD's decision fatigue would kick in after four decisions in the morning, you know?
Right,
it just feels more overwhelming if you already struggle with executive functioning.
Right, exactly. And then solutions, I mean, they're like, make less decisions in your life. And you're like, fuck you. But they actually...
It's true.
It is true. So most places I read about, suggested developing habits and routine to kind of almost automate your life, which sounds silly, but actually works. And an example would be a surgeon doing the same surgery the same way with the same instruments every single time.
Mm.
You know, you want to automate that. You want to perfect it. And that way... you do the same thing every time. You don't have to make any decisions about the way that you do certain things because you've always done it this way. Classic example, you wear the same types of clothes every day, like a cartoon.
Yeah, I do.
And that is one less decision you have to make.
Yep. I think everyone should, like a president. Many presidents do
Obama
that.
Talks about it. Mark Zuckerberg and what's his face?
Steve
the
Apple Jobs.
Guy with the turtlenecks. Yeah.
Yeah. He always wore the same thing.
Yes. Because of decision fatigue. And I think actually Steve Jobs is quoted saying something about it. But
yeah.
Fuck that guy.
And I feel like when we talk about like making habits or routines, we always think of ADHD as, oh, we are really bad at making routines. We're really bad at making habits. But the thing is like, with ADHD, even if you're not able to make purposeful habits and routines, you'll still fall into those like heuristic routines.
Yes.
If you don't have the ability to set up healthy ones, you're still going to fall into a routine. It's just like maybe not an ideal routine.
Right, right, right. But trying to do better routines is good.
Yeah.
Another thing they recommend is planning meals. My suggestion was maybe eat the same thing every day. Sometimes I do that. If you eat the same thing every day until you get bored of it, like a little safety meal.
And then you're fucked.
And then you're fucked. But that for sucks. A brief moment in time, you're like, yes,
oh,
this is one
so
less decision.
Nice.
It's nice when you're in that. Take breaks, obviously, like the nurses, you know, you want to take breaks. And that way you can get your, you know, your brain back, I guess.
Hmm.
All places I read said make your hardest decisions in the morning, which makes sense.
Hmm.
My suggestion is to make doctor's appointments first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
And then if you're showing if you're with someone who's showing signs of decision fatigue, like maybe they're avoiding a big decision, you can help them decide. And not by like choosing for them, but maybe.
But maybe. I would love that. Sometimes it's like, tell me what to do.
Yeah. Sometimes please. Like, or give them like a multiple choice.
Mm.
Sometimes I feel I do that all the time at work. I go, do you want to start this medication on this patient today or tomorrow? I don't give them an option of like 3 days from now. Multiple choice.
That's a good idea.
Or I do this a lot with Christopher when we're deciding restaurants. It's like I pick two, he picks one. So I pick two restaurants and from those two, he picks one.
That's a good strategy.
That's a good strategy. Yeah.
I've been watching Monk. Did you ever watch the show Monk?
A couple times,
from 2002.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix. It's very delightful. I highly recommend it. It's a very fun watch. I never watched it growing up. But he's obviously very autistic on top of OCD.
Yes.
And one of his major autistic traits is decision paralysis, where he can't make a decision. And so like as we're talking about this, and he literally at one point asks someone like, tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Please just tell me what to do. I don't
sometimes
know what
to do. You just need someone to take over.
Yeah. But it makes me think that like on top of the decision fatigue of like spending all day making these decisions, it wears on your executive functions and then you can't make decisions. But also then when you think about autism, the autistic brain has to make so many freaking calculations of like how to make the exact, because that's the executive dysfunction that comes with autism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that you have to be able to make the exact right perfect choice.
Mm-hmm.
So on top of feeling fatigued, it's like you're having to consider so many friggin' angles and so many different parts that it's like, of course, that's going to feel so exhausting and overwhelming.
Exactly. And then, yeah, I couldn't find a lot of articles that were referencing ADHD or neurodivergence or autism and decision fatigue, which I think is silly. Yeah.
Hmm.
Maybe I didn't look hard enough, but it really, there wasn't.
I guess I hear it more referred to as like decision paralysis within the neurodivergent community.
Maybe that's why. I had the wrong keyword.
Yeah.
That's probably why. But I have a lot of postulations. This is what I'm calling Chris's postulations.
Kristen postulates. All right. Postulate.
Well, so people with neurodivergencies, I think, are more susceptible to decision fatigue from reading all of this and doing this podcast for so many years. And I think a lot of that has to do with the bottom-up thinking that we do.
Mm.
We're taking in so much. The bottom-up thinkers, please see our episode, Top-Down Man and Bottom-Up Boy, right?
That's it. That's the title.
That is a title, yeah, that we have. So in that episode, we talk about different ways of thinking. And I think the neurodivergent community is more likely to be a bottom-up thinker where you're taking in all this information and you have to do all this research first. But then you also have to make the decision and filter out what's important, what's not important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more of an automatic process for the top-down thinker. And so that's so many more decisions you have to make, even on like in like the back of your brain. This is something that's automated for a top-down thinker that is manual for us. And I think that's huge. It's so many more decisions that we're making every single day.
Yeah.
I think external stimuli, we're more susceptible to external stimuli, like an itchy shirt tag, heat or cold changes or loud noises. And that can also affect our decision making because it's more information we're taking in and we're more sensitive to that information. And there's also this, I didn't really talk about it, but there's another, this Baumeister. No, it's not Baumeister. It's a different guy who basically did this study. And I do have it linked below where he basically put the participants' hands in ice water and then made them answer questions. And surprisingly, the people who had the ice water hands were having a hard time answering questions because they had all that external stimuli compared to the people who weren't submerged partially in ice water. You know, it's uncomfortable. You're responding to that stimuli, and you have to make these, you know, that's more stimulus, that's more information to take in. I think that would also affect your decision making.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's a really interesting way to think about, yeah, that neurodivergent aspect, like especially, you know, ADHD as well, but especially when you're autistic and you're experiencing these sensory inputs on such a heightened level. Like, right. I feel that too. If I have to pee, it's like, don't talk to me. I literally can't even think. And like, it's all
exactly.
I can focus on.
Because that's so much information that you're processing. And it's maybe not like decision making, but it's information processing.
Yeah.
And so how can you make a decision about, like, you know, what shirt to wear when, you know, there's that weird hum from the light bulb in your closet? You know?
And the autistic brain doesn't habituate to those sensory inputs. So it's like, it's not like, well, just stop thinking about that for now and just, like, you know, make this focus on this and then go back to that. It's like, no, your brain literally cannot tune out this uncomfortable sensation.
It's so much information.
Yeah.
And yeah, no wonder why you're having like decision fatigue or decision paralysis. I can't believe I didn't fucking put that into my search engine.
That's
anyway.
Okay. And then when you talk about, you know, that's such a good point about like, we're susceptible to the external stimuli. So it's like a lot going on. So it's hard for us to focus. But also then you think about like packing for a trip. If you have like these huge sensory needs and you're so sensitive to like the temperature and the wind and like the shirt tags and the materials, it's like, that's so many more friggin' decisions that you have to make about what clothes you pack and like how you prepare for things. Even leaving the house, it's like, well, I have to bring a sweater. Will I have to bring this? Like, do I need my sunglasses? Am I gonna need tissue?
Do I need house shoes?
Yes. Like, there's so many more decisions you have to make because there's so many more factors you have to consider.
Exactly.
Whereas Ian will just like leave, you know, and this is more of the ADHD versus autism breakdown, he'll just like leave the house. And if he's a little uncomfortable, then it's like, he'll be fine. But it's like, for me,
I'm not fine.
If I'm uncomfortable, we're all going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
So
I'm bringing extra sweaters.
Yeah. I need to put this time in to really, really consider every little decision, because we've all learned from experience that, you know, I will make things miserable and we'll have to go home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, and then my last little tidbit is there's a lot of articles out there about like automating your life and making a habit, making a routine. That's really hard for people with ADHD. We crave that like novelty, the variety of life. It's hard to make a habit. It's hard to be in a routine. It's really difficult. And so to have that like kind of blanketed advice, I just almost wanted to just say like, fuck you. I'll show you routine.
Yeah. Like ideally. Yeah. And it's also hard to break out of our like poor routines.
Yes,
I feel
exactly.
Like.
Yeah. It's a lot of executive function.
Yep.
It's a lot of, and you know, once you're in a routine, great. That's your routine. You got it. Nailed it. But just to develop that and to make that habit, that's crazy. That's so difficult.
And last year we did that episode, or maybe 2 years ago, we talked about how forming habits is like, it takes the ADHD brain like three times longer than the neurotypical brain. And also then with ADHD, you also have that problem where, okay, maybe you get a good routine going. You've done this for 2 years straight. You're so good at it. It's just automatic part of your life. You don't have to think about it. One thing changes or one thing goes slightly wrong.
Yeah.
You could just never do that routine ever again and just lose it. This great habit that you've had.
Yeah. You get a cold and you're like out of work and now you're like never exercising again.
Exactly. Yeah. You like literally never go back even though you were doing such a good job with it. So it's like, even if you do manage to get into that good routine with ADHD, it's like anything could change and throw it off. And now like your whole system is gone. So frustrating.
Yes, it's so frustrating. But so here's my suggestion. And then let me know if you want to try this. I'm going to try and try this.
You're going to try to try.
I'm going to try to try.
All right.
I'm calling it a variegated routine. Ooh. And I don't know if variegated is the right word, but it sounds fancy and I like it.
Yeah, it sounds nice.
It is, you have a routine, but you allow flexibility within the routine to accommodate for your need of novelty.
Mm.
So that's here's my example.
Like the ADHDer's dream.
I know, you get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
So I think this could be applied to a lot of different things. But my example is I exercise in the morning at the same time, hopefully, if I wake up on time. But I'm not doing the same exercise every day, which I would find super boring.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'm on the bike. Sometimes I'm doing a bar class. The other day I did shadow boxing, which actually was a workout. Even though I did the easiest class, I was very sore the next day. Nice. And sometimes if it's nice out, I go for a run. Oh. So I do a lot of different things. So it's a lot of variety and I get to mix it up, but it's technically the same thing, right?
I'm still
getting my exercise.
Yep.
So Grace, my example for you is you wear the same types of clothes every day, but they're in different colors. And maybe sometimes you wear different pants with it, or maybe you wear a different undershirt.
Yep.
Just mixing it up.
I wear the same undershirt, but I do wear different pants.
Well, fuck me then.
No, that's a good example, because I wouldn't be able to just wear the same exact thing, same color every single day. Like, I would hate that.
Yes.
It was just like gray sweatshirt, black pants.
But so you have some autonomy in like choosing like the color, but you...
The style and the fit is the same. Yeah. So I don't have to like wrestle with, oh, well, this, you know, this shirt kind of like bothers me under the arms.
Yeah.
It's like
you already know it's kind of the safe option, but all, at the same time, it's different.
I'm like, do I feel like a green today or a pink or a blue?
I'm loving the mint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It brings out my eyes.
Oh, it's very nice.
Yeah. I think those are good examples, and that's a really good way to do it. And like maybe if you really, really are in, you know, severe burnout and you really, you know, because burnout reduces your executive functioning even more.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're like just autistic, like maybe you do need the same exact thing every single day for a while.
Yeah, there's
like,
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Do the same things every day, whatever.
Yeah, like maybe
needs spontaneity?
Yeah, like maybe you would thrive with doing just the bike every single morning because that's what you need for now to just get you into that routine. And then as you kind of like heal your nervous system, heal your executive functioning a little bit, maybe you add in more variation to spice it up. Or, yeah, maybe you need to kind of switch it up every day in order to develop that routine.
Exactly.
Yeah, either way.
Make it your own.
Yeah.
Which requires decision-making, but I think less so than normal.
Yeah, I think, like, if you can make it where you're making a lot of, especially with ADHD, because we do have that impulsivity no matter what time of the day it is, you know, making a lot of the decisions ahead of time so you're not making them in the moment. And, you know, maybe you do want to make them in the moment, but I do feel like it's like how we were talking about a few weeks ago of like having a TV show that you just like, that's your show and you know that you can always turn to it.
Yeah,
like having these safety things where you're taking the decisions out of the things where you shouldn't need to make decisions.
Exactly. So that's let me know if you have a variegated routine or if you have a better name for that.
No, I think that's a great
Let me know what you're doing right on in. Maybe we'll have a whole, maybe I'll do like a poll question or something about it. But I would like to know if people have different variegated routines, if they're already doing this, if they want to make one up, if that works for you, or if you have any other comments. But yeah, but that's my little tidbit about decision fatigue. If you work in healthcare, I'm sorry about your burnout and your decision fatigue and your trauma.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Sorry. I'm right there with you. So
I guess another hack also, I mean, this is kind of a big thing.
Biohack.
Yeah, biohacking. No, but just like a life hack could be like if you really are in a profession that requires a million different decisions and it truly is like wearing on you and you already have executive dysfunction, like maybe you do think about switching careers. If it's truly to the point where it's like my brain stops working after the certain point, I can't make the decisions I need to make. It's kind of like really affecting my life.
Or just like a change, maybe not switching careers entirely, but maybe just
in a different area.
Slightly different.
Yeah. Or you find some way to, kind of take as many of those decisions out of it as you can. Like, I don't know, maybe if you have an assistant who can help you make decisions that like you don't necessarily need to always give your input on, you know?
Or talk it out with a colleague. We do that all the time in medicine. If a surgeon is having a hard time trying to come up with a plan for a patient because they are surgically complex, we have every Friday, we have a little morning meeting where we share images and talk about different patients. And we have like a little group vascular meeting where we get to put our input in.
And like you talked about where you and Christopher do the restaurant decision-making thing, that also, you know, you can have, whether it's a partner supporting you, a friend supporting you, a task paralysis tacklers.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what we were talking about.
That's trademark.
Yeah, absolutely. Where, you know, you just want someone to be like, start here And then you don't have to make these all these decisions.
Or just like a second opinion. Call in a consult. You know, you need it. We do that all the time in medicine. This person's medically complex. I need help.
Yeah.
I need another person on the team.
Especially if the decision comes with like a lot of weight to it, you know? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. If you have a tough decision, talk it out. You're one person. Talk it out. Get a friend. Talk to a stranger about it.
Get it out of your brain.
You don't have any friends? Talk to a stranger.
Yeah.
I would love to know. If you got a difficult decision, email me at Gmail. What's our email?
At gmail.com.
Yeah, that one.
You'll find it.
Where's the feather at gmail.com.
Yeah.
I'll help you with your decision. I think...
Yeah.
I'll do that. Yeah, yeah. If you have a difficult decision, let me know.
I love telling people what to do.
I know. I wish I could do that to myself.
Same. But I can't, and I won't listen to myself.
No.
But I'm like, everyone should listen to me. I'll tell you what to do.
I love giving advice. I shouldn't give advice. I don't think I don't make great decisions.
No, sometimes
it's more
you
of like a do what I say, not what I do kind of deal.
Yeah.
That's what I tell the med students. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
Yeah, maybe we could have some kind of business idea, some kind of
it's like decision making of task
community. Yeah.
Task tacklers.
Yeah, task paralysis tacklers.
Decision making dynamics.
Ooh, it sounds like a very fancy company.
It's a
maybe it's some kind of online hub where you submit. I guess it's just like Reddit.
It's Reddit. It's Reddit. We're describing Reddit. Yeah.
But really, I mean, using Reddit, that can be
there you go.
Helpful. Like, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But especially when it comes to things where you like, you know, it would benefit you to have like a professional's input or whatever.
Or just go outside on opinion.
Yeah.
Who like, especially if it's like someone who's not affiliated with the situation at all and is looking at it from a true outside perspective.
Yeah. Cause then you have like emotions involved with certain decision making.
Like even if you're like telling your best friend about something, they're still, they know your drama and your secrets, you know? Hopefully they do. If they're your best friend.
Yeah. So yeah, sometimes it is really nice to kind of just like get that outside input. And then if you see people overwhelmingly telling you, you should probably do one thing or the other, that just like helps you make that decision.
Yeah.
Crowdsource your decision making. That's a hack. That's a hack.
Biohack.
Yeah. A biohack.
Yeah. And that's all right. That's all I got.
That was a good episode.
Yeah. I learned a lot. I don't know if I'm gonna try apply some of the things that I learned to my life. We'll see.
Decide what you want for dinner in the morning. That's a good one, too. Whenever I do that, I have such an easier time.
That's a good idea.
It hits 5:30 and Ian's like, oh, were you thinking anything for dinner? I'm like, God damn it.
Yeah.
It's the last thing I want to have to think about right now. I can't make a decision.
It almost makes me, like, I get so upset trying to decide what to do for dinner if I don't have a plan.
Same.
I'm just like, I can't. I'm like, I'm decision fatigued. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I rely on my status quo bias of ramen noodles.
Yeah. Mine's pasta. So if you can't, like, if you're
the girl dinner.
Yeah. If you're the type of person who like can't eat the same thing every single day, which I get because I'm like that with dinner, especially. I get so sick of dinners. But like, maybe you can't rely on just doing the same thing every single day, but at least try to do stuff like making the decision in the morning because you know that by the time you get home, you're going to be decision fatigued.
Have a plan, you know. You're like, well, I want to make this, but I don't have any soy sauce.
Yeah.
Got to go to the store.
Yeah.
Buy a bottle of hoisin sauce. Look in the fridge. Oh no. Or if it's me, it's salsa.
You love to buy salsa.
I do love to buy salsa. I haven't bought salsa in a while. I'm like not allowed anymore.
Good.
For a good reason.
Yep.
We're almost done with all the salsas that I bought, so I'm pretty pumped.
Congrats.
All right. So if you enjoyed this episode and you're like, I want more,
please.
You can get more. Where? On Instagram at Weird as a Feather, on our Facebook group. You can email us at weirdasafeather@gmail.com. If you're like, let's keep this horse train going, you can donate to us at ko-fi/weirdsoffeather.com/weirdsoffeather. There's a .com in there. You'll find it.
Yeah. you almost had it. I was so hopeful. I was like, she's got it.
I got it.
I don't need to jump
in. Nope. That's ko-fi.com/weirdsoffeather.
Yeah.
Find us there. You can donate a nickel. You can donate a dollar. Maybe even more.
Yeah.
All goes back to the podcast to keep this horse train running for our software and our editing. And That's about it. Yeah, that's all we can afford right now.
It. Yep.
That's our budget.
Yep.
And yeah.
Okay.
Are you ready for this bod?
I'm ready.
I want your bod.
Nice bod.
Today's bod is called the rock ptarmigan with a silent P. You decide where the P is.
Yep.
No, it's at the front.
It's ambiguous.
It's a snowy white bird during the winter and a brown bird in the summer because it sheds its feathers.
Oh.
I think that's how that... It molts. That's what it is. Yeah.
Molts.
It's a grouse-like bird that lives in the Arctic. They eat leaves and berries. And in the winter, they can be seen following caribou herds who will, like, scrape up the snow with their hooves to get through the grass. And then they'll kind of, like, forage from there.
It's really smart.
That is smart.
I really like animals that use other animals as tools.
Outsourcing.
Yes, outsourcing is what that is.
The rock ptarmigan, professional outsourcer.
Yeah, I respect it.
Yeah, you got to get that hustle.
Yeah.
In here, I found this bird on TikTok. It has, the males have really funny eyebrows, and I was like, this one for sure.
You love an eyebrow.
I love a good eyebrow. In the winter, they have an eyebrow. In the summer, they're just kind of brown.
Yeah.
All right.
All so eyebrow.
They have a couple different songs, so we'll do a couple. Here's the first one.
Okay. It's very croaky.
It's very croaky. It's like my grandfather clearing his throat. All right, here's the second one.
All right. Oh my God. Seems like
that one's called guttural rattle.
Oh.
So if that's any inspiration for you,
yeah.
You would need to hear it another time.
Yeah, one more. Sounds like he's talking. It's higher. I feel like I'm damaging my vocal cords.
It sounds like one of the eels that Ursula has clearing its throat.
Mm.
What are they called? A flotsam and jetsam?
Yeah, those guys. All right. Can you see it?